The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning to you. This is Richard Martin of the Wake Up Call coming to you from Singapore. And all things being equal, it is the 19th of December 2011. Now, some of you may know, I mentioned this the other day, I am going to be out of the office for a couple of weeks. In fact, I'll be back on the 6th of January. So, right now, as I speak to you, I'm in the process of recording 5 shows for your predilection and enjoyment. And, of course, therefore, since they are recorded shows, please do not call in with questions or comments, because there'll be nobody here to take your call. Likewise, you're more than welcome to send in emails with questions, but they will not be answered until the 6th, that's Friday the 6th of January, when I will be back. In the meantime, I'm going to do what I've done a couple of times before in the last few years, which is to keep you in the loop, as it were, with ideas, opinions, thoughts, concepts that we perhaps may not have visited for quite a long time, and using this as the opportunity to catch up on some ideas that some of the more recent listeners will not have been acquainted with. Obviously, I will not be dealing with current affairs, that's to say things which have been happening in the last few days, because they haven't happened yet. And like what you might like to think, I am not a clairvoyant. So I cannot look back on things which haven't happened, and therefore I shall not attempt to do so. I will, however, say that whatever happens or whatever will have happened between the time I record this show, which is actually on the 7th of December, and the time you listen to it 12 days later, many things may have happened. Europe is in a terrible state of flux. I absolutely mean that in the most strict sense of the word. Europe is in a complete and absolute emergency. It has seen nothing like this since actually way before the Second World War, since basically the late 20s, early 30s, and this risks being even worse than that in its horror. Brought on, I may say, entirely by Europe itself. There was no need for this to happen. Nobody was upset with anybody else. There was no war on the offing. There were no overriding reasons why Europe had to throw all caution to the winds and decide to adopt a uniform currency and try to pretend that they're all exactly the same and the cultures really are just matters of small behavioral detail as opposed to entrenched and long-seated differences of the way in which things get done, which after all is what makes Europe Europe. But no, Europeans decided they wanted to pretend that that was not the case. And as anybody could have told you or them at the time, as I indeed did, you cannot put a square peg into a round hole, and you cannot make Europeans from the north dance to the same beat as the Europeans from the south. It's just not going to happen. And to give them a uniform currency were simply asking for trouble. And if there's one thing that has amazed me, it is that this whole thing has lasted as long as it has. But be that as it may, this is neither here nor there. This is now a problem that the world will have to deal with. The worse it gets, obviously, the worse the problem becomes. So, you know, basically, I'm afraid that there is no solution to this. There is only going to be tremendous economic trouble, and who knows where that might lead in terms of more devastating physical conflict down the line. I don't know. I have no predictions to make. I have no clear view of the ultimate unraveling of this situation, but I can tell you that it is exceedingly serious. So that being said, back on the 6th of January when I get back, we will review the situation and perhaps we'll have something to talk about and some conclusions about the near term that we will be able to bring to the table. But for now, I think things will probably slow down a little bit over the Christmas New Year period, and that is indeed why I have decided to move away from my turret here, and I shall be watching very closely, and do not think I shall have completely abandoned ship. I will be keeping in very, very close touch with everything that's going on, and so I will be there in spirit, if not in the flesh. All right, well, since it's been a really long time since I last talked about derivatives in any detail on the wake-up call, I thought it might be time to revisit these monsters. I did talk about them at the very start when they reared their ugly heads back in 2005, 2006, and I warned that they would be the undoing of the entire system. And, of course, we have seen that already to some extent in 2008 with the financial meltdown, which was pretty much entirely derivatives-based. Of course, the mainstream don't want you to know this. They don't really want you to blame the derivatives because they love their derivatives. It means a lot of fat profits for very few people. And when things go wrong, well, they could just dump the losses on the backs of the taxpayer, can't they? It's all very nice and easy, and we wouldn't want to upset that apple cart now, would we? But, you know, the big Wall Street banks are really making tens of billions of dollars a year in the derivatives market. So obviously nobody in the financial community wants the party to end. The word derivatives itself sounds complicated and technical, but understanding them is really not that hard. I think what I'm going to do is to just go through the motions of giving you a very brief overview of what derivatives are, so that for those of you who were not with me 4 or 5 years ago, you haven't had a chance really to examine this, you can perhaps get a feeling for what's going on here. It's very important to understand derivatives. If you have any designs on an understanding of the problem as a whole, because derivatives themselves are really an offshoot of the futures markets, which many people know about. Basically, the idea that you can bet on a commodity, like you know, it could be treasury bonds, it could be coffee, cocoa, gold, you know, live cattle. I mean, just about anything which moves that is traded on the commodity markets, the futures markets, exchanges in the United States. They are properly controlled, and the exchanges demand a margin deposit money to be placed at the end of each day, depending on the client's overall net positions at the brokers. And, of course, therefore, it makes it very easy to mastermind what's going on. Now, a derivative, and of course those are derivatives, they just happen to be derivatives which are exchange-based and therefore very much under control, making it very difficult to imagine that anything very serious could happen because the exchanges themselves monitor the progress of the commodities both on the down and the upside. So immediately they see there's a problem in a broker, they simply call the broker for placement of margin money into the exchange to offset the losses that may arise. Now, a derivative is essentially a fancy way of saying that a bet has been made. Originally, these bets were designed to hedge risk, but today the derivatives market has mushroomed into a kind of mountain of speculation unlike anything the world has ever seen before. Now, the estimates of the notional value of these worldwide derivatives markets go from $600 trillion all the way up to $1.5 quadrillion. Now, I'm not going to ask anybody to start adding zeros here. It doesn't really matter. It's a figure which is so monstrously spectacular that it doesn't bear thinking about. Now, remember, I'm talking from now on about derivatives which are not exchange-based, derivatives that were as often as not agreed over lunch on a napkin around a table between perhaps two people representing different houses, one agreeing to purchase from the other. And nobody ever would have known about these except the people in the brokers themselves, the brokerage houses themselves. So it's in fact extremely difficult to know how much money is placed in these monsters. That's why I say when the notional value is anywhere from $600 trillion all the way up to $1.5 quadrillion, that really is about as close as we can get because we have no idea how much money is involved. So, looking at these figures, and keep in mind that the GDP of the entire world is only somewhere in the neighborhood of $65 trillion. So, the danger to the global financial system posed by these derivatives is actually so great that Warren Buffett himself calls them financial weapons of mass destruction. Now, for now, the financial powers that be are trying to keep the casino rolling, but it is inevitable that at some point this entire mess is going to come crashing down. And when it does, we're going to be facing a derivatives crisis that really could destroy the entire global financial system. And that is not an exaggeration. And you know, most people don't talk much about derivatives because they simply don't understand them. And who can blame them? And in fact, I think perhaps at this point a couple of definitions would be helpful. Bloomberg defined derivatives the following way. In an article, and I quote, derivatives are financial instruments used to hedge risks or for speculation. They are derived from stocks, bonds, loans, currencies, and commodities, or linked to specific events such as changes in the weather or interest rates, end of quote. Now, see, the key word there is speculation. Today, the people on Wall Street are speculating on just about anything that you can imagine. And Investopedia defines derivatives as follows. A security whose price is dependent upon or derived from one or more underlying assets. The derivative itself is merely a contract between two or more parties. Its value is determined by fluctuations in the underlying asset. The most common underlying assets include stocks, bonds, commodities, currencies, interest rates, and market indices. Most derivatives are characterized by high leverage. End of quote. Now, as I said before, remember, a derivative has no underlying value of its own. A derivative is essentially a side bet. And usually, of course, these side bets are highly leveraged. So at this point, making side bets has got totally out of control in the financial world. Side bets are being made on just about anything you can possibly imagine. And the major Wall Street banks are making a ton of money from it. The system, as I said, is almost entirely unregulated, and it is totally dominated by the big international banks. Over the past couple of decades, the derivatives market has multiplied in size. Everything is going to be just fine as long as the system stays in balance. But once it gets out of balance, we could witness a string of financial crashes that no government on earth will be able to fix. Now, the amount of money that we're talking about is absolutely staggering. Graham Summers of Phoenix Capital Research estimates that the notional value of the global derivatives market is $1.4 quadrillion. And in an article for Seeking Alpha, he tried to put that number into perspective, and I quote, "If you add up the value of every stock on the planet, the entire market capitalization would be about $36 trillion. If you do the same process for bonds, you'd get a market capitalization of roughly $72 trillion. The notional value of the derivative market is roughly $1.4 quadrillion. Now, I realize that that number sounds like something out of Looney Tunes, so I'll try to put it into perspective. 1.4 quadrillion is roughly 40 times the world's stock market. 10 times the value of every stock and every bond on the planet. 23 times world GDP. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, Wall Street, and that's, I'm talking about regular human beings representing financial interests in the different countries of the world represented on what we call Wall Street. Wall Street is, at this point, completely and totally out of control. In an excellent article that he did on derivatives, Webster Tarpley described the pivotal role that derivatives now play in the global financial system, and I quote, "Far from being some arcane or marginal activity, financial derivatives have come to represent the principal business of the financier oligarchy in Wall Street, the City of London, Frankfurt, and many other money centers. A concerted effort has been made by politicians and the news media to hide and camouflage the central role played by derivative speculation in the economic disasters of recent years. Journalists and public relations types have done everything possible to avoid even mentioning derivatives, coining phrases like toxic assets, exotic instruments, and, most notably, troubled assets, as in Troubled Assets Relief Program, or TARP, also known as the monstrous $800 billion bailout of Wall Street, the speculators, which was enacted in October 2008 with the support of Bush, Henry Paulson, John McCain, Sarah Palin, and the Obama Democrats. Well, now, most people don't realize this, but derivatives were actually at the center of the financial crisis of 2008. They will almost certainly be at the center of the next financial crisis as well. For many, alarm bells went off the other day when it was realized that Bank of America had moved a big chunk of derivatives from its failing Merrill Lynch investment banking unit to its depository arm. So what does that mean? Well, an article posted on the Daily Mail the other day explained that it means that U.S. taxpayers could end up holding the bag. I quote, "This means that the investment bank's European derivatives exposure is now backstopped by U.S. taxpayers. Bank of America didn't get regulatory approval to do this. They just did it at the request of frightened counterparties. Now the Fed and the FDIC are fighting as to whether this was sound. The Fed wants to give relief to the bank holding company, which is under heavy pressure. This is a direct transfer of risk to the taxpayer done by the bank without approval by regulators and without public input. End of quote. So, well, did you hear about this on the news? Of course not. Today, the notional value of all the derivatives held by Bank of America comes to approximately $75 trillion. J.P. Morgan Chase is holding derivatives with a notional value of about $79 trillion. Obviously, it's hard even to conceive of such figures. Right now, the banks with the most exposure to derivatives are J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and HSBC Bank, USA. Morgan Stanley also has tremendous exposure to derivatives. You may perhaps have noticed that these are some of the too big to fail banks. The biggest U.S. banks continue to grow, and they continue to get even more powerful. Back in 2002, the top 10 U.S. banks controlled 55% of all U.S. banking assets. Today, the top 10 U.S. banks control 77% of all U.S. banking assets. These banks have got so big and so powerful that if they collapsed, the entire financial system would implode. You know, you really would have thought that one would have learned our lesson back in 2008 and would have done something about this. But instead, guess what? The country has allowed the too big to bail banks to become bigger than ever. And they pretty much do whatever they want. A while back, the New York Times published an article entitled, "A Secretive Banking Elite Rules Trading in Derivatives." That article exposed the steel-fisted control that the too big to fail banks exert over the trading of derivatives. Just consider the following excerpt from the article, and I quote, "On the third Wednesday of every month, the nine members of an elite Wall Street society gather in Midtown Manhattan. The men share a common goal, to protect the interests of big banks in the vast market for derivatives, one of the most profitable and controversial fields in finance. They also share a common secret. The details of their meetings, even their identities, have been strictly confidential." End of quote. So which institutions are represented at these meetings? Well, according to the New York Times, the following banks are involved: J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and Citigroup. Those same five names seem to keep popping up time after time after time because these five banks keep pouring money into the campaigns of politicians that supported the bailouts in 2008 and that they know will bail them out again when the next financial crisis strikes. Those that defend the wild derivatives trading that is going on today claim that Wall Street has accounted for all of the risks, and they assume that the issuing banks will always be able to cover all of the derivative contracts that they write. But ladies and gentlemen, that is a faulty assumption. Just look at AIG back in 2008. When the housing market collapsed, AIG was on the wrong end of a massive number of derivative contracts, and it would have gone bust without gigantic bailouts from the federal government. If the bailouts of AIG hadn't happened, Goldman Sachs and a whole lot of other people would have been left standing there with a whole bunch of worthless paper. Now, you need to understand, it is inevitable that the same thing is going to happen again. Inevitable. It's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. Except that next time it will be on a much grander scale. When the house goes bust, everybody loses. The governments of the world could step in and try to bail everyone out, but the reality is that when the derivatives market comes totally crashing down, there won't be any government on earth with enough money to put it back together again. A horrible derivatives crisis is coming. It is only a matter of time. And quite frankly, there's pretty much nothing you can do about this. You know, you couldn't stay alert for any mention of the word derivatives or the term derivatives crisis in the news. Almost everybody will have no idea what they're talking about. And then you, my faithful listeners at the wake-up call, will be in a perfect position to explain. But I have to say that kicking the can down the road, or not kicking the can down the road, when the derivatives crisis arrives, you are going to know about it. And things will start falling apart very, very rapidly. So, I don't know whether it's Europe. I don't know whether it's going to be a European function. I rather think it is. We are obviously moving closer and closer to the moment of truth in Europe. 12 days could be a very, very short period of time, or it could be a very long period of time. If in fact in the intervening period between the time I'm recording this and some frightful disaster takes place, you will know about it, ladies and gentlemen, and you will be able to understand what is going on. You will not hear about it from the mainstream press, but you will understand, because this is exactly what happened with Lehman Brothers. They went under not because their bottom line was incapable of keeping them together, but because the debts that they had incurred through the derivatives market and through the contracts that they had written in derivatives absolutely did them in, and nothing else was responsible. It does seem as though America and Europe are going down for the count. You know, we're in a hell of a mess now, and however loudly the same few may plead, the chances that it will get turned around without disaster striking are slim indeed. And the type of restructuring both America and Europe need is so difficult and painful that even if the current political systems were functioning, it would still take many years and the kind of courage and sacrifice that doesn't seem to exist, quite frankly. You know, one of these days, some unforeseen event akin to the child in Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's New Clothes declaring, "But he isn't wearing anything at all," may serve as the tipping point that brings the entire financial system to its knees. You know, to get a proper understanding of the current situation, we should start by ignoring all the noise propagated by the experts, the media, and the elected officials. The global financial system is based on the very simple and fragile concept of confidence. So you really can't blame the policymakers and politicians for not telling the public the entire truth, feeding constant reassurances, peppered with little mendacity. And to make things worse, it's just human nature for us, the recipients of this information, to reject the idea that the worst can happen. And that's where our willingness comes from, to find reassurance in the misinformation that we're fed. But I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the worst can happen. I doubt the citizens of Imperial Rome ever considered that their empire, which stretched from the Atlantic Ocean to the Caspian Sea, would eventually collapse on itself from the sheer weight of effort and resources needed to maintain it. Or that 16th century Spaniards ever thought that their high standard of living, sustained by the plundered riches of the New World, would disintegrate once the supply of gold dwindled. I personally know for a fact that the upper-class 19th century Brits leading up to 1918 never fathomed that the sun could cease to set on lands ruled by the British Empire. You know, history has shown that when great nations mature and overextend themselves, they revert to the paths of least resistance. They borrow and or print money. They all did it, and they all failed. And this time, with the United States, will be no different. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, let me quickly give you my information before we go to a break here. I am Richard Martin. This is the Wake Up Call for those of you tuning in for the first time. And I happen to live in the sunny city of Singapore, all of 75 miles from the equator, but with delightful breezes that keep the temperature to a maximum of about 85 degrees. So, with that in mind, I issue my twice-weekly wake-up call in the dead of night, and it comes to you from the good offices of Progressive Radio Network in New York City. And you could normally call in and air your ideas and questions, but right now that isn't possible. But you can write to me with your questions at my email, which is rm@gfawd.com. That's RM for Richard Martin at GFAWD, which stands for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design.com. So please feel free at any time, write in your questions. I will gather them up and try to give you an answer on the 6th of January. Once more, rm@gfawd.com. All right. I also have a personal direct line, but I'm going to hold off on giving you that number today because, again, as I told you, there's nobody going to be able to answer the phone, so you might as well send the questions in the email or wait until the second week in January, and we'll have a good go at your ideas at that point. All right, so let's take a break, and I will be right back. All right, so I'm back, and let me just very, very quickly tell you about the next meeting of the Richard Martin meetup group, which will take place in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and it will happen on the 30th of January, 2012, and it will take place at 2 p.m. in the afternoon at the George Street Ale House, and the address of the George Street Ale House is 378 George Street. And if you would like to go, the object of the discussion overridingly is a moral issue of how to get yourself psychologically prepared for what I'm afraid will be the obvious and unmistakable need to leave the country if you wish to have any kind of sanity in your lives from very shortly. People will talk about that, and people of a like mind will be able to help you to develop that kind of a motive. Susan is the moderator, and if you would like to go, if you'd like some more information about it, please call her. Her number is 202-246-5131. Again, the number is 202-246-5131. That is Susan, who will be glad to talk to you about matters pertaining to leaving the country and what kind of steps you might want to take. She's got a lot of information for you. She's very knowledgeable. She took over recently from Lou, who has in fact gone on a trip to indeed investigate possibilities for living outside the United States for himself. So, we've had a little chat from now about derivatives. Let me talk about now a little bit about retirement money and savings. And baby boomers, this is pretty much for you. It's not funny. According to the Employee Benefit Research Institute, 46% of all American workers have less than $10,000 saved up for retirement. And 29% of all American workers have less than $1,000 saved for retirement. Now, let me repeat that in case you weren't quite focused in on what I just said. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. It is a horrifying statistic. 46% of all Americans have less than $10,000 saved for retirement, and 29% have less than $1,000 put away for when they retire. And according to a recent poll conducted by Americans for Secure Retirement, 88% of all Americans are worried about, quote, maintaining a comfortable standard of living in retirement, end of quote. Well, last year that figure was 73%. And a study conducted by Boston College's Center for Retirement Research has found that American workers are $6.6 trillion short of what they need to retire comfortably. One out of every six elderly Americans lives below the federal poverty line. On January the 1st, 2011, the very first baby boomers started to retire. For almost the next 20 years, more than 10,000 baby boomers will be retiring every single day. At the moment, only about 13% of all Americans are 65 years of age or older. By 2030, that number will soar to 18%. Right now, there are somewhere around 40 million senior citizens. By 2050, that number is projected to increase to 89 million. Back in 1991, half of all workers planned to retire before they reached the age of 65. Today, that number has declined to 23%. And according to one recent survey, 74% of workers expect to continue working once they are retired. According to a recent AARP survey of baby boomers, 40% of them plan to work, quote, until they drop, end of quote. A poll conducted by CESI Debt Solutions found that 56% of American retirees still had outstanding debts when they retired. A study by law professor at the University of Michigan found that Americans that are 55 years of age or older now account for 20% of all bankruptcies in the United States. Back in 2001, they only accounted for 12% of all bankruptcies. Between 1991 and 2007, the number of people between the ages of 65 and 74 that filed for bankruptcy rose by a staggering 178%. So, do you know what is causing most of these bankruptcies among the elderly? Can you guess? Well, the number one cause is medical bills. According to a report published in the American Journal of Medicine, medical bills are a major factor in more than 60% of the personal bankruptcies in the United States. Of those bankruptcies that were caused by medical bills, approximately 75% of them involved individuals that actually did have health insurance. Public retirement funds all over the United States are woefully underfunded. For example, it has been reported that $33.7 billion of Illinois teachers' retirement system is 61% underfunded and is on the verge of complete collapse. Most states have huge pension obligations which threaten to bankrupt them. For example, pension consultant Gerard Miller told California's Little Hoover Commission that state and local government bodies in the state of California have $325 billion in combined unfunded pension liabilities. That comes to $22,000 for every single working adult in the state of California. Robert Novi Marks of the University of Chicago and Joshua D. Rao of Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management have calculated the combined pension liability for all 50 U.S. states. What they found was that the 50 states are collectively facing $5.17 trillion in pension obligations, but they only have $1.94 trillion set aside in state pension funds. And that is a difference of $3.2 trillion. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the Social Security system paid out more in benefits than it received in payroll taxes in 2010. This was not supposed to happen until at least 2016. Sadly, in the years ahead, these Social Security deficits, so-called, are scheduled to become absolutely nightmarish as hordes of baby boomers retire. In 1950, each retiree's Social Security benefit was paid for by 16 U.S. workers. According to new data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, there are now only 1.75 full-time private sector workers for each person receiving Social Security benefits in the states. The U.S. government now says that the Medicare Trust Fund will run out 5 years faster than they were projecting last year. The total cost of just three federal government programs, the Department of Defense, Social Security, and Medicare, exceeded the total amount of taxes brought in during fiscal 2010 by $10 billion. In the years ahead, expenses related to Social Security and Medicare are projected to skyrocket dramatically. The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is the agency of the federal government that pays monthly retirement benefits to hundreds of thousands of retirees that were covered under defined benefit pension plans that failed. The retirement crisis has barely even begun, and the PBGC is already dead broke. The PBGC says that it ran a deficit of $26 billion during the fiscal year that just ended, and that it will probably need a huge bailout from the federal government. According to a survey by CareerBuilder.com, 36% of all Americans say they don't contribute anything at all to retirement savings. More than 50% of all investors in the United States that are currently in their 60s have more than 80% of their 401k plans invested in equities. So what's going to happen to them when the stock market crashes? A survey taken earlier this year found that 20% of all U.S. workers admitted that they had postponed their planned retirement age at least once during the last 12 months. Back in 2008, that number was only at 14%. Between the last quarter of the U.S. recession, Q2 2009 and Q3 2011, nominal national income has increased 11.6%. Given the 4.7% increase in the domestic purchases price deflator that translates into a 6.6% gain, which is 2.9% as an annualized rate, a very weak recovery compared to those after the 1973-75 and particularly the 1981-82 recessions, but still clearly an undeniable statistical recovery. However, as the population has increased by 1.9%, per capita national income is up only 4.6%. And for the vast majority of Americans who rely primarily on income from their jobs, it gets worse. Because while real corporate profits rose as much as 49.6%, real labor income, the compensation of employees, rose only 0.9%. Given the 1.9% population increase, this means that real per capita labor income has fallen by 1% during this so-called recovery. It is normal for corporate profits to increase more than labor income during recoveries, just as it's normal for them to drop more than labor income during slumps. However, the divergence has been larger than normal this time, and more importantly, economic growth has been much lower, creating the unusual situation where workers are worse off during a recovery. And since most people depend almost entirely on labor income, this means that most Americans are worse off during the recovery. So there we go, ladies and gentlemen. You know, recovery or no recovery? I'm afraid you're going to have to decide. Well, let's talk a little bit about the 2% third quarter estimated GDP, which was revised sharply down. Now, real GDP is not only negative, but it is extremely negative. And I'm afraid you're not going to hear that from the mainstream. You're going to hear it from me and a few other people. But this is not something which you're going to hear on a daily basis. So listen up very carefully, because you might not find this information anywhere else. American GDP is overstated by 40% or more because they count the deficit spending and the debt owed to private bankers as production. That means that GDP is really a measurement of what you might call moneyness, not of production. Now, note how all the current Fed measurements of money supply add up to debt, since, of course, as we've discussed many times in the past, all money is debt. Then note how the national debt is now $15 trillion, not the $14 trillion. They can't update their charts fast enough to keep pace. When you take the GDP and divide it by the money supply, you quickly understand that something not good is happening, namely that the amount of so-called production for a given amount of money is diminishing rapidly. Now, because money is debt, we are effectively boxed in. Every time you add more money, you are adding more debt. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the impossible math. If you pay down your debt, you have less money. So you see, the math is simply impossible. Now, how hard is this to understand, for crying out loud? Of course there are savvy people in politics and in banking who fully get this. It is by design. Debt is their tool that is used to control you. So now let's examine the recent announcement that corporate profits rose by 6.5% year over year, the third quarter, up from the 0.3% prior. So first, let's look at the highlights. Corporate profits in the third quarter grew to $1.507 trillion annualized, up from $1.470 trillion in the fourth quarter, previously $1.47 trillion. Profits in the third quarter rose an annualized 10.3%, following a 4.3% gain in the quarter before, previously 4.3%. Now, profits are described as being after tax, but without inventory valuation and capital consumption adjustments. So corporate profits on a year-on-year basis advanced 6.5% compared to up 0.3% in the second quarter. Of course, these so-called corporate profits are complete nonsense too. They are there only due to fraud. Remove the fraud and corporate profits vanish. Now, I'm talking about all the fraud, the mark-to-fantasy accounting, the offloading of stench-filled debt to Fannie and Freddie Mac, the corporate shell games that are being played, the rating agency fraud, the war on drugs, money laundering, etc., etc., etc. As proof of that, corporate profits rose parabolically as the fraud rose. Then, for a very short time, mark-to-market accounting was reimposed and profits crashed. They used their make-money-from-nothing power to buy off Congress and the FASB, and bingo, next thing you know, mark-to-fantasy is back, and so are parabolically soaring corporate profits. Huh? Did your home value recover like those corporate profits did? How about your retirement plan? Does your budget look better than ever? How about your cost of living? Didn't think so. I'm afraid it's just too big to fail. Who want to deceive you all with their productivity propaganda. Well, let me conclude this little rant with the words of Robert F. Kennedy on just this subject. And I quote, "Too much and too long. We seem to have surrendered community excellence and community values in the mere accumulation of material things. Our gross national product, if we should judge the United States of America by that, counts air pollution and cigarette advertising and ambulances to clear our highways of carnage. It counts special locks for our doors and the jails for those who break them. It counts the destruction of our redwoods and the loss of our national wonder in chaotic sprawl. It counts napalm and the cost of a nuclear warhead and armored cars for police who fight riots in our streets. It counts Whitman's rifle and Speck's knife, and the television programs which glorify violence in order to sell toys to our children. Yet the gross national product does not allow for the health of our children, the quality of their education, or the joy of their play. It does not include the beauty of our poetry, or the strength of our marriages, the intelligence of our public debate, or the integrity of our public officials. It measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning, neither our compassion nor our devotion to our country. It measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile. And it tells us everything about America, except why we are proud that we are Americans. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that takes it up to the hour for today. I urge you to stay tuned. You will have Johnny Miller, who will be with the Expat Files, talking in some detail about Latin America and why it is a good place to take refuge against the horrors of what is about to come and befall you in the United States. So with that, I wish you a great time ahead, whether it's the weekend or the week. I'm not even quite sure what the 19th of December is at this point, but wherever it is in the week, ladies and gentlemen, look after yourselves, take care. I will be back with another recorded message next time. This is Richard Martin at the Wake Up Call saying bye-bye till then.